If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
We can either curse the darkness, as Jason Hartman says, or we can light a candle. And I'm all for lighting a candle. The best way to help the poor is not to become someone who's poor.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Paul Moore is the founder and managing partner of Wellings Capital. After graduating with an engineering degree and then an MBA from Ohio State, Paul entered the management development track at Ford Motor Company in Detroit. After 5 years, he departed to start a staffing company with a partner. They scaled and sold the company to a publicly traded firm 5 years later. After a brief retirement, Paul began investing in real estate in 2000 to protect and grow his wealth. He has completed over 85 real estate investments and exits, appeared on HGTV's House Hunters, rehabbed and managed dozens of rental properties, and developed a subdivision. After completing 3 successful real estate developments, including assisting with the development of a Hyatt Hotel and a very successful multifamily project, Paul narrowed his focus on commercial real estate in 2010. He is married with 4 children and lives in Central Virginia. Paul, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be here, Sam, man. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. The pleasure is all mine, all mine. Thank you so much for coming on today. The normal questions I ask people when they come on is, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get here? But really, I want to spend today kind of highlighting what's going on with inflation. It's something maybe you can give us a little bit, shed a little bit of light on your background quickly, but then I'd really like to spend the rest of this show just diving deep into what you think is currently happening with our money.
Man, for those of us who grew up in the late 60s, 70s, early 80s, inflation was a dirty word. It was like something that was destroying America. Jimmy Carter was the first sitting president who ran for re-election who did not get re-elected since Herbert Hoover. And the, you know, a lot of people thought Nixon caused it. Carter made it worse. Ronald Reagan saved the country. Ronald Reagan said, inflation is a thief. It's a robber. It's a murderer. It's, you know, always bad. And my question that I asked myself this week as I dove deeper into this, is it really always bad? I think of grandparents whose savings were ravaged in the late 70s and early 80s. I mean, I heard of a guy whose pension paid for 2 months' rent, this older guy. And then after the inflation hit, you know, between 77 and 83, his pension paid for half a month's rent. I'm thinking of gas lines. I'm thinking of oil embargoes, all the and interest rates, you know, like 15, 18, 20%, kind of like you see these high interest credit cards. That was the mortgage rate, Sam. It was unreal. So is it all really bad is the question. And I've come to the conclusion that inflation, if you know what you're doing, is potentially the greatest or one of the greatest wealth building tools for a real estate investor. It's amazing.
All right. That's kind of counter the news, counter what everybody else says. So, I don't even know where to start with questions on this. So the floor is yours. Please defend your thesis.
Okay. Richard Cantillon was an economist about 300 years ago. And Cantillon said that the people closest to the money stand to benefit the most from whatever a government or Federal Reserve does, okay? So the two most powerful forces on earth, you know, that dwell on the earth at least, are central governments and central banks. And they work together and they're operated by incredibly, incredibly greedy and power-hungry people. I'm not saying they're all bad, but I'm saying overall, incredibly self-serving people who are lining their own pockets. And we could even talk about the recent stimulus in the United States as an example of how the poor are being robbed to incredibly enrich the rich. But I'm not going to talk about that today. I'm going to talk about inflation. Now, I'm not blaming President Trump, President Biden. I'm not blaming anybody for the current inflation. I'm just saying this inflation is real. 30% of all the money printed in the United States history was printed in 2020 and a whole bunch more in 2021. And so we're talking lumber prices, you know, doubling or tripling. They say a price of a debt costs three times as much as it did a year ago.
Price of a what?
The price of building a deck.
A deck.
Yeah, there's massive 10% inflation in 1 month on used cars. I mean, there's just this massive amount of inflation as we're making this podcast. And yesterday they announced, you know, as much as the consumer price index is dumbed down to assure that the people don't believe there's really inflation, even the consumer price index could not be controlled. Last month, in April of 2021, last month, they believe, you know, that inflation went up, you know, much, much higher than anybody projected. And of course, us who are out there buying oil and food and gas and lumber and steel, we know it's much, much worse than they're telling us. And so back to Richard Cantillon. Cantillon said those closest to the money tend to benefit most. So the question is, can we align ourselves in a way without hurting anyone? Can we align ourselves with those who are benefiting the most? And I say real estate is the way to do it. Now, those who benefit most, again, are those with the controls, those behind the curtains, those who are making inflation happen. And again, I'm not blaming anybody. I mean, I'm not even, you know, even if COVID was created in a lab, I'm not blaming them for this. They couldn't necessarily predict it all that would happen, whether it was intentionally or not intentionally released. It's not my point at all, but there's a lot of money being printed. Now, inflation is driven by consumer demand, by scarcity, and by printing of money. Printing of money is what I'm focused on right now. When you have twice as much money, I'm just making that number up, chasing the same amount of goods and services, you're going to have inflation. When you pay workers to stay home and lay on their couch and eat Doritos, and you've got restaurants who are desperate to hire people and they have to pay more to keep their doors open, you're going to have inflation. When you have chips in cars that aren't getting put in, and so now there's these millions of used cars are now in higher demand, you're going to have inflation. And there's so much more I could say. My son does land and timber, and the price of land and the price of timber has gone through the roof. He had a $120,000 timber sale. He went to auction. That was projected amount. He went to auction. It went for $204,000 the other day instead of 120. And so we have real inflation. The question is, how can we harness it? Well, finally, I'm going to get around to this. Here's how we harness it. It's really simple. We have an opportunity. I literally think Jason Hartman said it's the unprecedented in world history. In 5,000 years of world history, according to Hartman, they've studied interest rates, and interest rates right now in the U.S., and I don't mean today, but I mean in this year in general, are the lowest they've been in world history in 5,000 years they've tracked it. At the same time, we've got the seeds and the beginning of inflation that's higher than any time since at least, I think, 2008, right before the crash, and likely going to be as high or higher than any time since 1978, 79, 82, when inflation was running literally 15% a year. And so if that combination holds, we're going to have this massive disconnect between interest rates and inflation. That difference is wealth building material. Here's why. If you can lock in a very long mortgage, let's say on your personal home at 30 years, and let's say you can get I got a quote on a mortgage last night at 11 o'clock last night of 3.5%. Now, my son, when he got his mortgage last fall, it was 2.6%. So let's say you can get it between 2.6 and 3.6%, but inflation, let's say, is running 4%, okay, per year. Well, right now you're basically borrowing for free, because whatever the inflation number is, if it's anywhere near as high as the interest rate or even higher, then you're borrowing money for free. And I think your listeners know what I mean without me really breaking down the numbers on that. What I'm basically saying is, at the same time, you need to get that much of return on your investments just to break even every year. And the problem is, if you keep that money in savings, like our parents told us to do, that money is going to erode. That money is going to be, there's going to be a great transfer of wealth from people who save money and who lend money to those who borrow. I know Dave Ramsey would just shoot me for saying that. But if you can borrow a lot of money on your house, or better yet, on rental properties, lock it in for a long time at a very low interest rate, you're going to get dual effect. Number one, you're going to get the asset appreciating. And if you see my screen here, that asset's going north, but you're going to have the debt depreciating. The difference between that depreciated debt and that appreciated asset is, in a sense, your profit. It's at least your nominal profit. Nominal means in name only. Your real profit is some fraction of that, but still, it's a powerful thing. And I've looked at some numbers for the last week here, and it's like the delta, the difference between what you pay off and what you're getting is amazing. If there's seriously 4, 6, 8, 10% inflation for the next 5 or 10 years, which I don't see how there could be anything less than that really, then you're going to have a massive erosion in the dollar. And that $1,000 a month payment you're making on, let's say, $160,000 mortgage will seem like peanuts 10, 20, 30 years from now. You're still paying that, but all that time, your rents are going up with inflation. And so it is a powerful combination. And then along the way, Sam, if you harvest lazy equity every now and then by doing a refi, a cash out refi, or a home equity loan of some type, keeping the original fixed debt in place and doing a cash out refi, even at a higher interest rate, you can use that cash to buy another home and then another home or another apartment building or whatever. You can do this using 35-year FHA debt on apartments. That's not a widely known product, but there's an FHA product where you can buy 200-unit apartment complex with 35-year locked in debt at very, very low interest rates. 35 years. How will the world have changed between now and 2056? A lot of ways. Yet you'll still have that same low payment the whole time. And rents, who knows where they'll be, but they'll be many, many times more than they are now, I'm guessing, if inflation kicks in.
Yeah, I like the way you're thinking there. And maybe I can summarize that by saying, the ability to buy any asset that you can quickly reprice. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I think that could be because I've got an interest in the laundry business.
Yeah.
So I own a laundromat, right? And all we got to do is in 10 seconds, I can get online and change every price in that machine and or every machine in that building in 10 seconds online.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's like, well, I can reprice that. And that's been one of my, and I'm looking for more of those just for that very reason. It's like, well, wait, I mean, so say inflation goes through the roof and now my utilities went up and everything else. Well, I can just change the price of machines right away.
It's like, I love it.
Gas pump. I mean, same idea, but your vehicle is then obviously through real estate and the ability to reprice rents, the ability to, like you said, take equity out and lock in long-term debt. What happens to that? So as interest rates rise, and let's see if I can even formulate this as a thoughtful question, but interest rates rise, inflation rises. I mean, does that not just cancel each other out, or am I just sparking up the wrong tree?
No, as long as your fixed payment on the mortgage is locked in. Now, unfortunately, for commercial loans, you can only get up to typically a 12-year mortgage. I got a 12-year mortgage on my last apartment building. And so that's typical, but there's a 35 and even a 40-year option I hear with FHA. Now, anybody who knows FHA mortgages for commercial loans knows it's a massive pain in the butt.
Right.
As far as the paperwork, the ongoing requirements, the ongoing inspections. But man, if you can lock in 2.9 or 3.2 or whatever percent it is now for 35 or 45 years, I mean, Sam, you'll be like 80 years old when that thing's paid off. And guess what? You're not even paying it off. Your renters are. That's a beautiful thing.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So savers are losers. We've heard that before, right?
Yeah.
What else? What does someone do or how do you protect cash if you, I mean, you have to keep some powder dry at some point for opportunity. So how do you protect that? How do you protect that dry powder as you wait for the next thing you're investing in?
I haven't totally figured that out yet. I don't know if you've interviewed Dave Van Horn yet, but Dave Van Horn is a note investor near Philadelphia. And he has terms as little as like 60-day cash out. So in other words, I can put it in there, be getting 8 or 10% interest on it. And then I say, hey, Dave, I need cash in 60 days to buy this apartment building. He can give me a 60-day cash out, you know, provision on there. So that's my best guess on how to do it. Another way to do it might be to loan it through hard money lenders. I will tell you a way I don't recommend, and that is doing something like Bitcoin. You know, again, I'm not against Bitcoin. It's not an investment. An investment is something that throws off income. A speculation has no underlying true value necessarily, and it may go way up, it may go way down, it may go to zero. Some people are putting money in Bitcoin to keep their powder dry and they've crushed it, but that doesn't mean they always will.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, gamble coin is probably the more the name of it. But yeah, I mean, that's like you said, it's speculation. It doesn't throw off. How do you foresee people in the lending space? I mean, it seems like lenders just get hosed in an inflationary environment.
You know, I've been thinking about this. This type of environment, let's say there's 4 to 10% inflation coming up, is going to be a great transfer of wealth from lenders to borrowers and from the old to the young. Now, why the old to the young? Well, typically, historically, the older ones have been the ones who are the great savers, and they're the ones who are in a position to effectively lend. And so that may not always happen, but the lender to the borrower, certainly. I think I haven't figured all this out, but from what I understand, the lenders are locking in T-bills or, you know, T-bills, T-bonds, et cetera, and they're using that. And since they're able to lock that in for 30 years, and they're able to, let's say they can lock that in, I'm just making this up, 1%. And they're loaning money to me for this mortgage I mentioned last night for 3.5%. That 2.5%, they're guaranteed that stream no matter what else happens. So as far as I can tell, they're not hurt too bad. Somebody's getting hurt. And I'm thinking it's the American people, because the T-bill comes back on us. So what, again, let's go back to the Cantillon effect. What are their options? Okay, the government's got several options. Number one, they've got $60 trillion in unfunded liabilities. That's in today's dollars. I believe it's $220 trillion, some economists tell us. So number one, in unfunded liabilities over the next, you know, like 80 years. So number one, they can default. Not a great idea. Number two, they can sell off assets. In other words, they can sell off ports. They can sell off Air Force bases, okay? Not a good idea. Number three, they can go be like Napoleon, and they can go just steal, kill, and destroy others. And they can just take, like, they could, you know, let's say we took over Finland or something. I don't know why I said Finland. It was just fun. Not something America is in the habit of doing, even if some people say otherwise. It's not something we generally do. The Hawaiians might say otherwise. But the only option left is to inflate. And inflation, again, is going to benefit the Cantillon effect says it's going to benefit those printing the money and those close to the printing. Why do you think Nancy Pelosi is so wealthy? You know what? You might want to edit that out. I actually don't know that. But the point is, those closest to the printing of the money are the ones who benefit the most. And if we can align with them by borrowing wisely and then letting inflation do its work, we can create multi-generational wealth. Look, we can either curse the darkness, as Jason Hartman says, or we can light a candle. And I'm all for lighting a candle. The best way to help the poor is not to become someone who's poor. We can help a lot more people, a lot more orphans, a lot more human trafficking victims if we can use these strategies to gain wealth, pass them on to our kids, and teach them to help people too.
Yeah, I love your heart in that as well. You know, I think that's a good ending for really what we're talking about. But I guess there's one other thought I want to pass by you and see if it makes sense, because I'm a little bit out of my league here. But it's been argued that we have been able to live, the American people have now for the last 20 or 30 years, live a standard of living far higher than maybe what we should have, because we've been able to export our inflation for such a long time. Does that story make sense to you, where we're able to sell T-bills or T-bonds around the world and they end up taking our inflation because our money is then going into, they're buying our debt?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what I will say, and back to my four or five options for what the U.S. does to get out of this. I mean, okay. So look, let's say we owe, I mean, I'm literally making this up. I should know, but let's say we owe $10 trillion to China. Okay. Because of these T-bills they bought and everything. Well, the other option I forgot was to tax the people.
Right.
Well, it's impossible to tax them enough. And I could prove this. It's absolutely impossible to tax them enough to get out of this hole. So again, the only option is to inflate the currency and therefore to devalue the currency. Now, if we can pay China back, if it costs us $10 trillion, again, I'm making up that number, to pay China back, that's going to be really, really, really painful. But if that $10 million the dollar is devalued so badly that $10 trillion now only costs us effectively $1 trillion, and I know that's a huge stretch, but let's say it's true. Well, we can do that, and we've kept our obligation to China. And so, yes, I agree with what you said.
Right. So there may yet still be some exporting of our inflation that's possible. But yet, just going back to April's numbers, it just doesn't look like that's happening.
Right.
Right. I mean, we are seeing it in the price of raw goods, in the, you know, at the grocery store, at this stuff is. And even I think the CPI doesn't include food and energy, does it?
I actually don't know. So the CPI, and again, I'm not trying to criticize anybody, but they use three tricks to actually manipulate it. Number one, they use substitution. So they basically say, well, if beef's too high this month, we assume everybody will get chicken. So they literally substitute. What?
Right.
Number two, they do weighting. Well, they say, well, beef's toilet paper's way too high. So maybe people will, what would they use? Anyway, so they do weighting. They weight things different. Like, okay, so gas is way too high. People will use Uber or they'll work at home. And then third, they use something called hedonic weighting. And for time's sake, I won't go into that, but it's criminal to think that hedonic weighting is okay. And those are three things they do to manipulate the CPI. And it's laughable. And I'll tell you this, anybody who's trying to buy any of that stuff we talked about knows that inflation's gone up more than 4% in the last year.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Jeremy Roll is a big fan. I had him on the show, I don't know, maybe 50 to 75 episodes ago. And he's a big, big fan of shadowstats.com, where you can
go. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Where you can go, and they do, I think, a pretty good job of really cutting the fluff out of a lot of the numbers that they want us to believe, and really, really kind of bring all those things back into light, where it's not like, oh, hey, instead of beef, we're going to use chicken. It's like, no, instead of beef, we're going to use beef because beef prices.
Because we like beef.
Because we like beef. That's right.
And chicken's a dirty bird.
That's absolutely right. Paul, I've loved this. This has been thoroughly enlightening. And I'm, you know, I love the way that you say, you know, one, borrow wisely, harvest equity, lock in long-term debt, because savers will be losers. And there's really no way around that. And it's tough to convince the old school against that. I mean, I had to have this discussion with my mother in her mid to late 70s, and they just bought a new home, and you know, they got a 30-year, and my dad's a vet, so they got 30-year, and what's that, the program for veterans?
The VA loan.
Yeah, VA loan, and it's at like 2.5%, and I'm talking, wow, like mom, don't ever pay this off. She's like, well,
I just pay it off early.
Like, she's like, well, I just want to make extra payments so I can pay it off early.
No, invest that money.
I was like, mom, you'll be 105 when this gets paid off. I was like, save your money, go spend it, go have a good time with it while it's worth it.
Exactly.
Let your kids deal with that when you're gone. Like,
yeah, no, that's so true. And I know we're out of time, but there's one more thing I'd add to that mix. And that is, if you can get something that has buried intrinsic value up front, you can actually protect against the risk of debt. And here's what I mean. If you get into something, and for those of our real estate investor world, look this up if you don't know what it means. It's one of the greatest tools to gauge risk and return in a property, and that is the DSCR, the debt service coverage ratio, also known as the debt coverage ratio, typically starts out at 1.25 or 1.3, which means there's a 25 or 30% margin of safety in your deal.
Right.
If you can find intrinsic value, for example, you buy self-storage, you slap on a U-Haul rental business in the front of it. Costs you virtually nothing to add.
Right.
And you can add sometimes $500,000 to $1 million in value to that self-storage facility. That creates a margin of safety so that if there is a big dip in the economy, you've got a nice DSCR cushion. Check that out. That is the way to protect against the ravages of the debt side in this equation we just talked about for the last 20 minutes.
Paul, I've thoroughly enjoyed this. The last four questions are this. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Invest, don't speculate. Speculate is when you have no protection against the asset value and you may make a profit. Investing is when your asset is generally safe and you might make a profit. Making a profit through investing is slower and boring, and that's how investing should be.
Absolutely. Question number two is this. When it comes to investing in yourself, what is one thing you are doing to stay on top of your game?
Yeah, I'm trying to go back through the book, The One Thing by Gary Keller, just to stay focused and really, really focused on one thing at a time and not scattering myself out like I used to.
Love it. Question number three is this. When it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
Human trafficking is ravaging the world. If you took the record profits of Apple, GM, Nike, and Starbucks, record profits, added them together, tripled that number. That's the approximate revenue generated by human trafficking every year. It's slavery. It's awful. It's evil. And we need to do everything we can to stop it. I'm trying to promote that message and give to stopping trafficking and rescuing its victims.
Wow. That's staggering. That's absolutely staggering and heart-wrenching. Thank you for doing that. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
They can go to wellingscapital.com. That's W-E-L-L-I-N-G-S, capital.com, and put in /resources, and we'll give you a commercial real estate introduction course for free, as well as some guides on investing in self-storage and mobile home parks.
Paul, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, my friend.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.